Chapter 11. Astronomican. Any sailor within the void knows of the Astronomican, the so-called ray of hope. It is the psychic light by which millions of navigator mutants from gene-forged bloodlines guide their vessels through the tumultuous warp. Without the Astronomican, there is no Imperium. Less commonly known is its source. The Imperium at large believes the beacon is born of the Emperor himself, but he only directs the power. He does not produce it. Beneath the Imperial Palace, where 1,000 souls are shackled and sacrificed every day to the grinding machinery of the Emperor's life engine, the Astronomican is projected through the hell behind reality. A psychic scream echoing through the night, giving mankind a light to sail by. We can see that light. Those of us within the Empire of the Eye can actually see it. The Astronomican reaches even to our purgatorial exile, and to us it is no mere mystical radiance illuminating the warp. It is pain, it is fire, and it plunges entire neverborn worlds into war. It would be a mistake to believe the Emperor's power battles the four gods' forces here. It is not order against chaos, nor anything as crude as good against evil. It is all psychic energy, crashing together in volatile torment. Most of the radiant worlds are uninhabitable, lost in the lethal crash of conflicting psychic energies. Armies of fire angels and flame-wrought projections wage war against everything in their path. We call this region the Fire Tide. What made the Avernus Breach so valuable was its path, not its destination. It cut through the systems forever bleached bare of life by the Fire Tide, and into the calmer, radiant worlds beyond. These are the star systems bathed in psychic light without burning in it. Entire centuries will pass without a single vessel sailing the region, for it offers little to us beyond yet another example of soul energies manifesting in ways mortals can barely control. On more than one occasion, the Mechanicum has sought to use neverborn spirits bound within arcane flesh machinery to record the radiant worlds in an ever-shifting, evolving map. Such attempts have fared as poorly as you might imagine. The creature, calling itself Imperius, was another facet of the Astronomican's power. An unconscious surge of psychic might, manifest not as light or flame or an avenging angel, just a holy man on a pilgrimage of his own. A ghoul, risen from the Emperor's restless dreams. I confess its gentleness unnerved me. I had expected rage and flame, not this odd echo of humanity.
"Why have you come?" the creature asked. "Why sail in the winds of the Emperor's chorus? There is nothing for you here. Your souls feed on conquest and thirst for blood. There is nothing to conquer within these tides. There is nothing that can bleed."
Across the Strategium, the mutants and human crew were still recoiling, cowering, crying out in the wake of the Avatar's words. Tajak stood with a pack of several of his bridge enforcers, their antiquated las rifles aimed at the ghost upon my throne. I saw blood running from his ears. He huffed bloody mucus onto the deck from his bestial snout, yet the rifle never lowered. Looking through Tajak's senses revealed the source of his wounds. He saw an insubstantial aura of rippling light, the way the sun reflects from the surface of the ocean. Instead of the solar priest's voice, he heard the screams of sacrificial psychers being fed to the Emperor's soul engine. "I will deal with this creature," I pulsed to the overseer. "Hold your positions." "You are harming my crew," I said to the solar priest. "These mortals cannot understand your words, and your power wounds them."
"I have come as the voice, not as the warlord. Harm is not my intent.
It carried no weapons, and I sensed no hatred within its mind. It felt nothing for us beyond passionless interest. We were curiosities to it, mere flickers of insubstantial life force. Its golden mask turned in a slow arc, regarding every one of us before replying.
What brings you into the Emperor's light here on the shores of hell?
A prophecy, said Lahore.
Loyalty, I corrected him. Imperius stroked its fingers across my throne's armrests, watching us with a tormented metal face. The thing's voice grew soft and reverent.
My place is to ask you to turn back, and so I ask it once more.
We looked at each other, we warriors from a handful of rival legions, not understanding the spirit's words.
Why? Asked Telemachon.
His face mask was a visage of serenity, opposing the Solar Priest's image of racking pain.
What threat are we to you?
You are no threat to me, for I am simply a bridge in the song. You are a threat to the singer.
And if we don't turn back? Lahore asked.
Then the song's next verse will be fire and fury, not wisdom and mercy. It will come. Not now, not soon, but in time and in force. The fate you seek to engineer cannot be allowed to come to pass.
Ashokai's interest rippled over me, feeling almost feverish in his fascination.
It knows the future, Kion. This creature is a vessel for true foresight. It must be bound.
You cannot bind a shard of the Emperor's power.
We must try.
Until that moment, I had never worried about my former master's waning power. He had always hungered for every scrap of prophetic insight he could clutch to his chest. But that was the first time I began to doubt his own abilities to see through the mists of potential futures. He had failed to warn me of the ambush in the storm's heart, but I had not paid much heed to that flaw. Prophecy is an unreliable art, and even those who claim to witness the future cannot agree on the path of events leading to it. With his sudden desperation, that failure was a sudden, sharper doubt. His own far-seeing was growing ever more erratic and rare in recent years. Was he growing weaker as time passed in the Empire of the Eye? Could it be that he sought a crutch to bolster his own fading powers? We drew closer, hands finding holstered weapons in the chill of the Solar Priest's claims. Telemachon stood at my left shoulder, Lahore at my right, while Gaia prowled low to the deck, her ears flattened to her canine skull. The enthroned spectre was distracted, enraptured by something none of us could see or hear.
Each of you has a verse and a chorus in the song, sung from the throats of the Emperor's choir. Warnings of rising, of awakening, of murder and fire among the stars. Is this who you would be? These instruments of destruction, the damnation of mankind.
Mankind has already forgotten who we are, said Telemachon. We're exiles. Just tales to frighten children into behaving.
I ask you to turn back,
the Solar Priest repeated. Its golden face was smeared with reflected light from the bridge's red illume globes.
That will not be happening, I replied. Weapons, my brothers.
Telemachon hefted his bolter rather than drawing his swords. It crunched to his shoulder guard as he took aim. Lahore's chain axe gave a quick whine. Sayern's familiar weight was in my hand.
Stop this aggression,
Ashokai pulsed.
This is a creature of prophecy. We must bind it. We must learn from it.
Irritation flooded me with the weight of yet another demand that I heed an unwritten future instead of claiming the freedom to make my own choices. Ashokai,
Sargon, now this Revenant. This is my ship, Ashokai. I do not heed the whims of ghosts.
No.
His bitterness was almost a plea.
Just the whims of demons and aliens.
I remember the Solar Priest's eyes above all else. A stare that should have been lifelessly metallic conveyed a wealth of emotion in cold gold. It was scared. Scared of us. Truly, it had come in a harmless guise only to be met with murder. This was no incarnation of the Emperor's might. It was nothing more than the desperate last gasp of a dying man. The psychic soup had formed a cruel, cowardly minister to speak on the Emperor's behalf. You would destroy us if you could, I challenged it. But we are past the firetide. All you can do is hurl burning Neverborn against the hull, resorting to begging when that fails. Now you appeal to our morality? You are preaching temperance to the wrong audience, Shade. Why should we turn back? What awaits us here? What is it you seek to stop us doing? In a slow ripple of robes, the spirit rose from my command seat. Telemachon and I held our weapons tighter in readiness. Lahore's pistol kicked with a resounding boom, barely a half meter from my right ear. The bolt took the Revenant in the chest, blasting stained cloth and viscera against my throne.
No,
came Ashokai's silent voice from his observation balcony above us.
You bloodthirsty wretch!
Sit back down, Lahore snarled at the spectre.
The Solar Priest didn't fall, despite the hole bust open in its chest. A tremor showed in its thin fingers. Veins grew dark beneath the skin of its arms. The metal of its face began to tarnish and corrode, aging before our eyes.
You are the death of empires,
the spirit told us as it rotted on its feet.
You will be the end of the Imperium. Is this what you wanted for yourselves when you first looked up to the night sky? As children on your home worlds?
It pointed with a hand that dripped rank fluid from beneath blackening fingernails. The pristine white robes were soiled by blood and excrement, the stains appearing in slow spreads, cracks cobwebbed across the gold face.
The end of the Imperium, said Telemachon, musing.
Lahore snorted.
A little theatrical for my tastes, but it has a pleasant ring.
The Solar Priest was down on his hands and knees, given over to the rot that ravaged it. A bone snapped in his thin forearm with sharp, dry splintering, casting him to the deck in a ragged heap. The reek of decay curled around us. Telemachon walked to the dying figure, resting a boot on its back.
My fate is my own, little ghost, and I have no love of prophecy.
That may have been the first thing he and I ever agreed on. He kicked the decaying priest in the side, forcing the apparition to roll onto its back. I could feel the thinness of his anger. The emotion was present, but starved of passion. Once he would have enjoyed this abuse, feeling the rush of dominating another being. But that pleasure was just one of many that I had stolen from him. He could feel little now, unless I allowed it. No finer way to collar him than to control the sensations he lived for. Ashokai reached us at last, falling to his knees before the diminishing ghost. His red eyes were still watering from the Astronomican's light before we sealed the oculus.
Are you crying, Albino? Lahore laughed.
Fools,
the White Seer whispered.
To destroy a thing of such import. A manifestation of the Emperor himself. Fools, all of you.
The Solar Priest couldn't speak. White mist wisped from his open metal mouth. One of the cracks across his cheek split open, shedding half of the mask's faceplate and revealing a skinless face beneath. The thing sought to stand again on shaking, stick-thin legs. Telemachon's boot drove it back down to the deck. Ashokai looked ravaged. The look he gave Lahore was harrowed enough that I thought he would drag the World-Eater's soul from his body right there.
Fool.
he said again, softer yet fiercer. The solar priest collapsed, coming apart the way sand falls through loose fingers. Where it had stood lay a fluid-soaked robe and a spread of ash across the deck. Nearby mutants coughed on the dead ghost's dust. None of us said anything. Had it been a weakling's warning, a spirit's prophecy, or just another figure of incarnated madness among the eye's tides? It was Gaia that answered my unspoken thoughts. She padded closer to me as we stared at the spirit's remains.
Your soul fire burns brighter day by day, Master. The Neverborn know your name, and more learn it each time you draw breath. Something is happening. A change comes. This priest retreated from us, but it will come again. I know this. I promise it.
I believe you, Gaia. I looked to Ashokai. Brother? He was crouched, brushing his hand through the ashes by our boots.
The Astronomicon is weak here, Kion. Even projecting its image must have required immense force. And out of spite, you silenced it with a single shot fired in ignorance.
It had delivered its warning, I replied. Taking either side felt petty. I had not ordered Lahore to fire, yet nor did I hold the dead creature in the same reverence as the White Prophet. Both of my brothers were trying my patience. Lahore, with his unreliable aggression, Ashokai with his stubborn martyrdom. The fight went out of him as he sifted through the ashes.
This dust will be an invaluable reagent in my ritual work. I will harvest it with your permission.
I looked at my former mentor, kneeling in the priceless dust of a dead avatar. I could sense his fury at me, that I'd been party to the destruction of a spirit potentially gifted with prophecy. Worse, I could sense his sorrow. Its remains are yours, I told him. Use them well. He did not answer. And if you can find out why it came before us... Ashokai sighed.
If you hadn't killed it, perhaps we would already know the answer.
I did not kill it, Ashokai.
You were a captain once, Sekandur. You know the first law of leadership. If you take the credit when things go right, be prepared to take the blame when they go wrong.
I thought something in my expression or my aura must have discomforted him. For upon delivering that lecture, his white features froze in a stare. Only when I looked behind me did I realize what had made him uneasy. Telemachon and Lahore had remained nearby, their weapons still drawn, looking down with me at the White Seer. How different the ship had become in such a short time. It was no longer Ashokai and myself overseeing the duties of slaves, thralls, weapon priests, and mindless rubrikai. Others stood with us. Others with their own hearts, thoughts, and visions. Their own agendas, creating conflicts. Balance was already strained, for we were all leaders of men. Ashokai looked up at us, warriors and commanders from three legions, and nodded at some unspoken decision.
So be it,
he said in silence. Our eyes met in that moment, my former master's and mine, and he did something he had never done before. Without another word, he gently severed the bond between us, refusing the touch of minds. We passed worlds burned clean of life, even down to the molecular level, annihilated when the Eye of Terror first opened. We passed worlds with oceans of boiling liquid gold or clouds of impossible fire vapor. We passed worlds where civilizations of blind things sensed our passing and shrieked at the ship with 10 million weakly psychic voices. We passed worlds where the ghosts of dead Eldar waged eternal war against what few demons manifested in the radiant worlds, as well as against spirits that resembled men
women, and space marines twisted almost beyond recognition. Every planet was bleached in the manifest light of the Astronomicon, as well as suffering the oppressive touch of the Great Eye. The Solar Priest's memory haunted me. In my idle hours, I would find myself dwelling on the Spectre's words and musing on its intentions. Even here at the border of the Radiant Worlds, past the curling reaches of the Firetide, the Astronomicon's light was far from weak. Had it been a truly prophetic vision? Was it an apparition that spoke for the Emperor and the Astronomicon itself? Or was it simply another ghost flicker of psychic whim, forming and disintegrating from the Eye's turmoil, with no bearing on any greater destiny? Few of the others shared my concerns.
"Shut up," Lahore said to me on the bridge when I asked him. "What's wrong with you? Worrying about 1,000 matters over which you have no control. Who cares what it was? It's dead now."
This was on the third day after our emergence from the Webway. We were looking through the Oculus at the gold-misted void ahead. Life is so simple for you. What you can kill, you kill. Any threats that you cannot overcome, you simply ignore or run from.
We call that survival in my legion.
But the Solar Priest, he threw up his hands. Weary resignation showed across his brutal, ruined features.
Tell me why you care.
Because it feels to me that the confrontation was a test. A test we failed.
Who is there to test us out here? What was it you said to Falcus back aboard the Chosen? We live in the underworld. Ghosts and visions outnumber us by 100 to 1.
I hadn't said those exact words, but the sentiment was true. He was right, just as I had been right when I'd expressed similar sentiments before.
If it comes back to trouble us, Lahore finished, then we'll kill it again. How many demons and spirits have our warbands dealt with over the years? You're sweating blood over a meaningless spurt of psychic energy. You should be more concerned with the fact we're lost.
We are not lost, I replied. We will be through the Radiant Worlds in a few more days and on the edge of the Eleusinian Vale.
Whatever you say, sorcerer. Any word from Falcus?
He's still unresponsive over the Vox. I was still not truly worried. The change from mortal to secondborn could take days, weeks, months. As long as Falcus's warriors kept their predations limited to worthless members of the crew's slave caste, they were free to do as they wished while in the throes of possession. On the occasions I had reached out to brush against Falcus's senses, I met a seething wall of poisoned memory that had no place in a human mind. Even with his will of iron, the battle in his body was not yet over.
And where's your new pet?
Lahore scratched at his scarred face with dirty fingers, then spat a corrosive gobbet onto the deck. He did it no matter how many times I asked him to stop. I do not know where Telemachon is. I have given him the run of the ship. The world-eater gave a guttural chuckle.
Oh, I'm not sure history will remember that as a wise decision, Kion. I wouldn't trust one of the Third Legion to burn, even if I set him on fire.
I said that same sentiment to Saad Arcadalus when the Emperor's children ambushed us. Please do not repeat my own witticisms back at me, Lahore. Lahore only grinned, showing a mouthful of reinforced bronze teeth. It took another stretch of days to reach the Eleusinian Vale itself. The hell in which we make our home is vast, with tides and eddies just like any ocean, including storms of impassable ferocity and islands of relative calm. Reality and unreality meet here, but never balance. The most obvious manifestation of that imbalance is that it's almost impossible to sail a fleet in or out of the Eye's borders and hope to maintain any cohesion. Keeping a fleet together while sailing anywhere inside the Eye was already a trial for even skilled sorcerers, navigators, or Neverborn. But to leave the Eye, to sail from its restless, brutal borders. That took talents beyond easy reckoning. That is what made our sanctuary so perfect. We could not easily leave, but the Imperium had no hope of entering. Not that it feared us, of course. The Imperium of Man scarcely even recalled our existences at that point in time. Some rare, serene regions of the eye are given over to cold, soul-aching silence. Standing at the edge of the Eleusinian Vale reminded me how an entire species died here. We spent our existences not only sailing in the echo of the youngest god's birth, but through the interstellar tomb of an alien empire. The Vale was a great red-black dust cloud, choking several long-dead star systems on the edge of the eye. Scans failed to penetrate deeply and revealed nothing worth mining. Ships that went in, few as they were over the centuries, rarely returned. And when they did, they relayed nothing worth returning for. What few reports I had seen did not even mention encountering any worlds. It was possible they had been swallowed whole when the youngest god was born. Our months of sailing had brought us to the Vale's edge, and the Talloc drifted with its Orspec scanners cast far and wide. The anamnesis heard nothing, sensed nothing, felt nothing from within the shroud. "Take us in," I ordered the bridge crew. The Talloc entered the Vale, scanner blind and shrouded in darkness. We had no destination. We had no true direction from Falcus, nor from the fragmentary descriptions given by Sargon. We simply sailed into the dust with shields raised and weapons armed. Nothing on the first day. The same on the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth. On the sixth day, we drifted through an asteroid field that we could scarcely see. Its size and density was a mystery to us, until Asher Kai and I reached forth with our senses and guided the ship as best we could in the cloying dark.
"This was once a world," he sent to me after a few hours.
I sensed no resonance that suggested he was right. "How can you be sure?"
"I felt it when one of the rocks crashed against the void shields a moment ago. I felt the echoes of life. This asteroid field was once a world."
"And what killed it? What shattered it into pieces?"
"We shall see, won't we?"
"Gravity hull," called one of the servitors, slave to the helm. The pull of gravity meant a large astral body nearby. The remnants of the broken world? The largest chunk? My suspicions ultimately meant little. Following the gravity hull was impossible, for it dragged us this way and that, obeying no natural law, revealing no source. It was as if the planet's remains were moving, and the asteroid field drifting with it.
"Now we're lost," Lahore remarked after the first week.
All I could do was nod in reply. On the 10th day, I surrendered to the need for sleep, and dreamed, as I always dreamed, of wolves howling through the streets of a burning city. But for the first time in decades, the dream melted away from old memory into something more. I dreamed of rain. Rain that burned my skin in prickling stings. Rain falling from a dirty marble sky down onto a frozen expanse of glassy white rock. When the rain washed over the ground, it hissed with steam as it bit into the ice. When it ran over my lips, it tasted of engine oil. When it ran into my open eyes, it ate my sight in itching bites, turning all I saw from occluded white to clearest black. I woke, running fingertips across my closed eyes.
"Did you feel that?" I asked aloud.
From across the room, my wolf growled an answer.
"As Kiaral,"
Lefertari said, giving the world its Eldar name. Telemachon chuckled at that. He spoke my Blood Ward's alien tongue as well as I did, though I had no wish to know how he had learned it. I could see why he'd laughed. Heart's song was a name the planet no longer deserved. Its face was cataracted by turgid storms covering the entire world in milky clouds. Lightning racked the occluded skies in random dances. It is a belief among some of my more spiritual brethren that all worlds have souls. If that is true, Askia Ral's spirit was a bitter and blighted thing that welcomed no outsiders. Its most drastic wound was the source of the asteroid field, for an entire half of the planet was simply gone. Such horrendous damage to an astral body should have destroyed the world completely, yet Askia Ral still lived, deformed as it drifted through the vast ash cloud, a broken world, unable to see its own sun. We stood by the command throne, watching the grey-white world on the Oculus. What was left of the planet could not exist anywhere else but in the Great Eye, where the laws of reality were enslaved to the whims of mortal minds. Our naked eyes told us nothing of what lay in wait on its surface. Our scanners told us nothing. A sensor probe launched into its curdled atmosphere told us, as you might imagine, nothing.
And what of other ships nearby?
Lihor asked. This is the Eleusinian Veil, brother. You could sail through the dust cloud for 3,000 years and not see a thing until you collided with it. He grunted in displeasure, a sound I was becoming used to.
Is there no way to read plasma traces in the atmosphere, to tell if any vessels have been in near orbit?
There is no way to do anything of the kind, said Asher Kai. Better minds than yours have already tried.
I watched the asteroids, what few of them I could see, hanging in the eternal gloom. We were in orbit around a malformed world with 1,000 rocky moons.
It looks like a half-eaten apple, said Ugrivian.
When I turned to him none the wiser, he shrugged.
An apple is a fruit. They grew on Nuvir's landing. Why would anyone come here?
Lahior struggled to see the worth in this retreat, because it didn't match his needs. Thousands of worlds in the Eye were inhabited by hordes of Neverborn, waging war upon each other, all part of the great game of the gods. Claiming a world was often the end game of many warbands, and what better way to spend eternity than on a planet you could reshape to your own desires? Askia Ral seemed a hollow prize, no doubt there. It's somewhere to hide, I said. Lihor spat onto the deck, still not convinced.
And the signal definitely came from here.
It was not a signal,
Asher Kai corrected him.
The vision, then.
What an amusing savage you are. A somnus cry is not a vision.
I saw Lihor's aura flare with irritation, but he otherwise ignored the albino.
Kion?
He asked. I didn't look at him as I replied. It was a somnolent, astropathic reaching.
Well?
He forced a nasty smile.
That answers everything.
He wanted clarification, but like so many manifestations of the sixth sense, astropathy is almost impossible to describe to those who have never felt its touch. Even many of those in the Imperial Inquisition, who may be the only witnesses to this archive, know next to nothing of the myriad disciplines possible within the art. Few astropaths directly serve in the Holy Ordos, and even the psychically gifted warriors and scholars among the Inquisition cannot commit to the decades required to learn how to speak as astropaths speak. Astropathy is a realm beyond the silent sendings of impulse and emotion that pass between many bonded psychers. When astropaths on distant worlds speak through the warp, they do not send words or even language. They are hopelessly unable to make any attempt at precise communication. Those trained in the art know the pointlessness of even trying such nuanced work. Skilled astropaths send impressions of their own minds, projected templates of experience and triggers of memory.
It might be a moment's emotion or hours of sensory revelation. This, consciously or unconsciously, is little different from reaching with one's senses, though it is infinitely more exhausting. Consider the way a whisper is nothing, but a scream leaves you breathless. What reaches a receptive mind is never what the transmitting soul sent. If sending and receiving were all it took to form such a communion, the Imperium would be a vastly different place. Most of the skill in astropathy lies in interpreting the visions one receives and tracing them back to the source. Entire orbital installations are given over to shackled psychers leashed onto surgical tables with pens in their trembling fists, while their nemocrafter overseers pore over endless reams of parchment paper darkened by scrawled visions. These hubs of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica make such beautifully ripe targets for our crusading hosts. No better way to silence a system than to cut its throat before it can cry for help. Sending the message is the easier portion of this psychic discipline. Interpreting the dreams is significantly more difficult. When is something a gift from a distant mind, and when is it simply a natural nightmare? When is something a warning of blood to come, and when is it a message, centuries late, only reaching another mind dozens of decades after its sender is long dead? Ashokai once dreamed of a city of screaming children who vomited black foulness into the streets. Such visions are common enough among those of us living in the demon-haunted eye, yet he held on to it, believing it to be a message. And so it was. A vision from the sorcerers among the chapter of the Onyx Moor, a word-bearer's warband destroyed by Lahore and the 15 Fangs. The albino had heard their astropathic death cry. These are the realities we deal with. One learns over time to sense flavors and signifiers in the sendings, to feel if something is recent, to know if it is true. Yet you can never be wholly sure. And if one does not learn such insight, many do not. The Imperium has a 10,000-year history of those who lost their minds and souls to the things waiting in the warp. I believe it was a message, I said to Lahore. That is the bluntest and truest explanation. He grunted, which wasn't much of a show of trust. Allow me to rephrase, I amended. I know it was a message. It guided us here, and though I cannot be certain of the message's source, this is the world in the Somnus Cry.
Oh, that still tastes like maybe. Trust me.
He shook his head, not in disagreement, but in rejection of me touching his mind. His left eye began to twitch closed in a painful tick. How strange. A simple brush of my mind against his had stirred his cranial implants into some kind of irritation. He never liked to be touched mind to mind, but there was an amplifying factor at play here. Was it the world beneath us?
Don't do that, he said,
and licked blood from his bleeding gums. The air shivered around him as pain spirits stroked his armor in loving caresses, waiting to be born. My apologies, brother. I looked back at the broken planet on the Oculus screen. I sense little in the way of life on the planet, though there is a shred of sentience. Ashokai's silent voice was dryly amused.
A shred of sentience? Firefist will be entirely at home.
My reply was just as dry.
You are Prosperine Dignity incarnate. Now let me focus. A shred of sentience, began Lahore.
I looked at him. His dark patchwork face was perfectly serious, not struggling with the concept, but needing more clarification. I heard Ashokai's laughter in my mind, but for all Lahore's brutality, the World Eater was no fool. I'd been journeying with Ashokai and Gaia for so long that it was easy to forget those with more mundane perceptions struggled to see the galaxy the same way we did. Lahore had nothing but his eyes and the ship's scanners to rely on. Nefertari was the same, but she rarely cared enough to ask. Whoever or whatever sent the message is a subtle creature.
Well, then just say that.
Agrivian, standing next to Lahore, shook his head.
Tisken formality grows tiresome, sorcerer.
Well, I shall bear that in mind.
I'm going with you,
Lahore stated. I'd not expected anything else.
Yes, am I,
said Nefertari. My alien maiden was standing by the arm of my empty throne, running a whetstone along the edge of her flensing knife. The others shared glances at my blood ward's declaration.
You will remain here, I told her. There is grave atmospheric instability, and I would need to keep you shielded the entire time. This is a mission for void suits and sealed armor. She exhaled a purr that dripped with displeasure.
Why?
I thought back to the dream message, with the hissing rain that burned my skin and milked over my vision with stinging pain. It's raining acid down there.